persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near. God save the United States.
Versus McCaffrey.
Good morning, Mr. Clerk.
Counsel. My name is Edward Brown. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Vincent McCaffrey.
Mr. McCaffrey appeals for his upward departures.
He used a specific guideline, and requests a remand under Booker. The district court upwardly departed 5 offense levels for pattern of abuse, in addition to the 5 levels that the district court had already imposed earlier in the guideline calculations. Additionally, the district court upward departed 5 criminal history categories for the same conduct, even though at the time the district court commented that it seemed somewhat redundant. We believe that not only is it somewhat redundant, it's impermissible double counting.
You're not really challenging the fact that the court could consider his confession on the stand and the overwhelming corroboration as a conviction or tantamount to a conviction, are you? It's just the idea of the double counting.
No, Your Honor, initially I wanted to say yes, but there is some qualification to that. In the analysis of the upward departure for the criminal history, I believe the government overstates the basis that it's using. And I'll point the court to the statement is prior convictions taken into account under the pattern enhancement are also counted for purposes of determining criminal history points. I think it's important in that phrase that we're talking about criminal convictions. But otherwise, I'm not objecting to the evidence that the government applied for either the pattern enhancement or even the 5-level increase in the pattern enhancement. So 10 offense levels, I think, is more than sufficient to address the evidence that the government showed. I mean, it's important to keep in account that this is very old conduct. It was never convicted. He was never even charged with it. When you're evaluating the necessity of a huge of a departure of the equivalent of 15 levels.
So the pattern enhancement, you're not objecting to?
We're not objecting to the pattern enhancement, and we're not objecting to
any
departure under the pattern enhancement. We are objecting to that 5-level increase in the criminal history.
In the criminal history. But, and certainly, if you didn't have those other enhancements, you wouldn't object to the criminal history enhancement. Put aside those.
Right, I think it's the equivalent of 15 offense levels is too much. I think 10 is certainly appropriate, especially when you consider the 5-level increase for pattern is very significant in and of itself. And when you're thinking about something in addition to 5, whether it's 1 or 2 or 3, it's got to be extraordinary. So the 5 levels is supposed to cover most situations that come before the district court. It's got to be outside the heartland to go even above that. And in this case, we're not contending that it wasn't outside the heartland, and we're not even contending that the 5-level upward departure under that particular offense level is inappropriate. It's the 5 additional criminal history categories that we find objectionable and that are appealing. The result of our objection is that if the 5 levels is taken off, that results in a criminal history range of 210 months to 260, I believe. And Mr. McCaffrey can only be sentenced to 20 years. He was sentenced to 20 years, of course. But the range would allow for a lower sentence than 20 years, the resulting range. Mr. McCaffrey is also objecting to the use of the guideline for receipt instead of possession. as this court's well aware, this court has, in at least a couple, maybe even three opinions, affirmed the district court's use of receipt instead of possession under facts similar to this. However, as this court is also aware, there's a split in the circuits on that. The point of this circuit's reasoning to I believe that your reason is not as strong as it could be for this particular these particular rulings. This court has said that receipt supports distributors. And I'm not arguing with that as a proposition. However, in other matters, such as drug matters, that's not a factor that increases somebody's guideline range. If the person's convicted of possessing for personal use, that's an extraordinarily lower sentence than possessing with intent to distribute. And I think the same analogy works in this case, especially since the person knows that the drugs he's getting are those drugs. A crack addict is a crack addict. He doesn't want heroin. He doesn't want marijuana. So he knows what he's getting, which comes to this court's other reasoning. The other reason is that there is a scienter intent in receipt as opposed to possession. The person has to know it's child pornography when he's getting it in order for the receipt to apply. And again, a crack addict knows it's crack he's getting. So his sentence isn't increased for personal possession use. And I don't think it's appropriate in this case, especially given the circuit split. We didn't raise this argument below. This is a plain error analysis, and I know that that's very tenuous to begin with. But, if this court overrules its prior precedent, it becomes plain error. However, even if this court does not, we believe that Booker puts a whole new turn on the analysis. Booker allows district courts to look at other things. And in this case, the district court, we believe, could look at the difference between the possession and the distribution guidelines. Now, even if it's appropriate to use the receipt guidelines, we think that the district court could look at them and talk about the disparity in the circuits. Somebody in the 11th and 6th circuits is looking at less time to begin with under the guideline analysis than in this circuit.
But the district court would be bound by the 7th circuit's precedent.
In the guideline determination, yes, it would. But Booker makes the guidelines advisory. And courts noted time and time again, even in the advisory system, the guideline is not necessarily the only sentence that the district court could impose, especially when the total punishment that this man could face is 20 years. The guidelines, even if this court doesn't rule in Mr. McAfee's favor on the other issues, the guidelines are way out a line there, and that may be an indication of the court to impose the 20 years. But also, the 20 years is something in which the court can look at to determine an appropriate sentence, a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary. There is no evidence in the record that I could find that the district court wanted to sentence him to a particular period of time. He was not unsatisfied with the 15 years when he imposed it, or didn't say so on the record, I should say. And when he imposed 20 years, he was required to. There was no downward departure. The only way he could have gotten below the 20 years under the stacking provisions is for a downward departure. And now Booker provides not a downward departure, but another analysis.
Is there anything in the record calling in the question of the district court judge's desire to sentence him to the longest possible prison term?
Your Honor, I found nothing in the evidence, nothing in the record from what the district court said to indicate that the district court wanted to sentence him to the longest period of time.
Is this court being Judge Dura?
Yes, Your Honor.
This court is just too personal. I'm here, I'm sitting.
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't believe that Judge Dara said anything that indicated he was dissatisfied with the 15 years in the first place. That was the original sentence. It was a 15-year concurrent sentence with the 5-year sentence. And I would have expected something like, boy, I wish I could have sentenced him to 20. You know, I had the two convictions. Or, you know, something a little bit less dramatic. But there's nothing like that in the record. There's just simply I'm sentencing him to 15 years, as far as I can determine. And when the judge sentenced him to 20 years, as I said, the judge had no choice. It was 20 years. The government was correct in its arguments, and the judge had to sentence him to 20 years. The last issue is the Booker demand. And, of course, if this court rules in Mr. McCaffrey's favor on either of the other two issues, then we're asking for a full remand under Booker. However, even if this court does not reverse on the other issues, resulting in a guideline range of 360 to life, we think that under Palladino, this case should be remanded. Again, I've discussed the district court's not indicating that he wanted to impose a higher sentence than 2 years.
Is there anything beyond your base that you have to argue on that point?
No, Your Honor.
Then why don't you quit?
Except I just want to ask you one question. In terms of the quote of the district court, when I asked you about the amount of time, he did say that he wanted to produce a combined sentence that is as near as possible to the total punishment allowed under the statute, right?
No, that's in the context of the 20 years, right?
Well, but, I mean, total punishment, to get as near as possible to the total punishment allowed under the statute. Under the statute, is 360 months. So, you know, I mean, that's the basis upon which I asked that question. He was trying to get to the highest sentence that he could, as close to the statute.
Well, the correct statement of law would be, I mean, he wanted to get as close to the guideline as possible, is what I'd expect him to say. If he said statute, that would be the 20 years. And it almost doesn't make sense if he's trying to get as close to the statute as possible. I mean, he's getting the statutory statement. And again, I would have expected a more definite statement. I think this man needs to be punished as much as possible. But I didn't find that. And that's the basis for my other arguments.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for the bond.
Okay, fine. Thank you. West.
I'll keep it brief, Your Honor. Judge Mannion, may it please the Court. My name is Clay West on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, briefly today, we believe the sentence should be affirmed in its entirety, and the Court should not issue a Palladino remand on the basis of United States versus Lee. Let me start out with the issue regarding the two distinct upward departures and sentencing the defendant under the receipt guideline. Your Honors, the Court was not clearly erroneous in sentencing the defendant to two distinct upward departures. The application note in Section 2G2.2 clearly addresses specific offense characteristics, not departures. Nonetheless, the principle is easily applied and readily applied to the issue of upward departures.
But when you look at 2G2.2, it explicitly refers to the double counting of child abuse convictions. And here, Mr. McCaffrey was never convicted or even prosecuted for child abuse. Why should we apply this note in this case?
It is correct he was not convicted for child abuse, Your Honor. However, the point here is that the convictions, the criminal history is largely and immensely underrepresented. There was testimony at the evidentiary and sentencing hearings from 5 victims of this abuse, and testimony indicated that there could have been hundreds of victims with severe abuse, physical, mental, sexual. And, Your Honor, the purpose behind the offense level bump up under 4A1.3 as well as a 2G2.2 indicates that the criminal history category is certainly underrepresented mm-hmm. here. And the basis for the bump up simply that the enhancement does not adequately, the record does not adequately reflect the seriousness of the sexual abuse or exploitation within his criminal history. And on that basis, we do believe it applies. Your Honor, the Commission was well aware of a pattern of sexual abuse being applied for both the offense level and the criminal history level. Because we feel that it applies both with respect to the specific offense characteristics as well as the upward departures, the double enhancement, excuse me, the double departure was properly applied.
Certainly when you look at the criminal history, you can look at all of this conduct, and certainly it doesn't adequately represent the heinous crimes that he engaged in. But I guess my question is, because we haven't been able to find any case law specifically addressing the issue of whether unprosecuted but uncontroverted crimes fall within the double counting exception of Application Note 2. I understand in terms of criminal history, but I'm talking about the pattern. Can you speak to that?
Your Honor, you are correct that there is no case law, or I have been unable to find case law directly addressing this issue. However, the application note specifically applies to that category, and in that respect, this was well within the intent and the express indication of the Sentencing Commission on this point.
So you're saying it's a policy consideration that's included in that note?
It is, Your Honor, and that is our position. Moving on with respect to the sentencing under the receipt guidelines rather than the possession guidelines, it is our position that there was no error at all. There were two counts charged in this case, receipt and possession. Defendant pleaded guilty to both in a blind plea, and it was proper for a defendant to be sentenced under the receipt position after having pleaded guilty to receipt. In the case of United States versus Malik, it points out that Guideline Section 3D1.3A directs the court to use the highest applicable offense level. When the same acts violate multiple laws, further, the prosecutor is free to choose the one with the highest sentence. And finally, United States versus Myers rejects the claim that receipt and possession are the same. Again, defendant pleaded guilty to receipt. I'd like to next move to the Palladino issue.
Yeah, and how do you interpret the judge's comment that he wanted to produce a combined sentence that is as near as possible to the total punishment allowed under the statute?
Your Honor, I think that quotation is the perfect lead-in to the and parallel to the case in United States v. Lee. In United States v. Lee, it stated that where the district court's intention is not contained within a fog and it is clear regarding where he would have sentenced, even had the applicability of advisory versus mandatory nature of the guidelines been clear, there's no need for a Palladino remand. In this case, the circumstances clearly show that no lesser sentence would have been imposed had the court correctly regarded the guidelines as advisory.
Well, it was on Judge Dare's initiation that he asked for further briefing on the question of whether it had to be concurrent versus consecutive, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. But the very nature of Judge Jarrett's request, whether he could impose consecutive sentences, indicates that he wanted to impose the maximum sentence possible. We, just to go through the three factors in United States Lee that set this out, in Lee, it was held that a Palladino remand is unnecessary where three factors or any of these three factors are met. The first, where the district court states on the record that if it had leeway, it would impose a higher sentence. Again, we've discussed this point. The district court did not make this explicit statement, but regarding adding for consecutive sentences, regarding stating that he desired to reduce the combined sentence as near as possible to the total punishment allowed under the statute.
Well, what's wrong with someone who went down and explained exactly what he wanted?
And not to overstate this issue, but a Palladino remand requires a use of judicial resources, both for the district court judge and for both parties involved.
Well, we'll still be here, so it's going to be sharky.
That is correct.
We don't have to go back to school or anything. We'll still be here in bidding.
That is correct. Where
keeping a lot of emphasis on allowing by judicial time, so he's getting paid for.
That is correct. But where the judicial intent is so clear in this case.
A few things into what he said, and then he comes from that, it would be easier just to say, what did you mean?
It's just an issue of judicial resources. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me move on to the second point. So then you wouldn't really object to it going back and being clarified if it's just a matter of judicial resources. Is that what you mean by that?
That is our position, Your Honor. However, again, we feel it is unnecessary in this circumstance because the judicial intent is so clear. And so our position is that there is no need for it to go back, and Palladino remand is unnecessary. I will state that the second factor under Lee is that when a court departs downward from the guidelines, and imposes a sentence below the calculated range, that's another factor. Excuse me, a departure. In this case, there were two departures from the guidelines.
Can we just go back for a minute on the sentencing question? Is there anything other than what we've talked about that points to the district court's desire to sentence him at the highest end? Anything else you have that I may have overlooked in the transcript?
Your Honor, the district court held extensive sentencing and evidentiary hearings in this case, and commented on the extreme chilling nature of the testimony that he had heard. Commented.
That's it. He first disclosure of what the defendant did, and it's as close as you come. Well, you know, it's not my problem here to say yes. You should know something on the record that's different.
Your Honor, the judge did not explicitly make a comment.
That's the point. Right. Yeah, and see, you didn't spell it out. It's not. I mean, I just wanted to make sure I hadn't overlooked anything. So he did not spell it out. He didn't make that statement. So, you know, we can put two and two together to assume, based on how heinous the crimes were and his comments about how heinous they were, that most likely he wouldn't have sentenced him to anything else. But it doesn't involve us making that leap. And that's why I want to know, is there anything else specific to your answer?
Your Honor, there is no comment as explicit as in Lee saying that I would have sentenced you higher if it were available to me. However, the other two factors in Lee also are in consideration here. We have two upward departures under the two guideline sections, both indicating that the court did not feel it was bound by the guidelines. We have the request to look into the issue of consecutive sentences, and the judge clearly evinced his belief that he had discretion and a disposition to exercise it adversely to the accused by applying these upper departures under the pattern of sexual abuse and under 4A1.33. It is our position that under these elements the Palladino issue is unnecessary on the basis of United States versus Lee, because
you said that.
Yes, Your Honor. And for this reason, we ask that you affirm the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGowan. 4 minutes.
Thank you. I have one final comment about the application note that the government's relying on based on prior convictions. That application note, to my mind, is simply to take away the general rule under the guidelines that if offense conduct is used to determine somebody's offense level, it is not then, and it results in a conviction. Say in a drug case, you've got a state case that's in between a longer conspiracy that's a federal case. The drug amounts in the state case are used to calculate the person's offense level under the federal case. The conviction is not used to increase conviction categories. This section in the application note in 2G2.2 simply overrules or changes that general guideline note, so it allows a prior conviction, if there is a conviction, to be calculated under the criminal history section as well. Thank you, Lawrence.
Okay, thank you. Please be taken under advisement.